What's up, pretty thinkers? It's Yasmin, and welcome back to Pretty Thoughts. So I have wanted to talk about cultural appropriation and digital blackface of the podcast for a very long time now. But it wasn't until I saw a TikTok video of a black woman discussing the way people assume she's appropriating Gen Z speech when she talks that really got my gears grinding again. And so I'm going to talk about that today, but I'm also going to use this episode to talk a little bit about the Little Mermaid controversy, because I feel like it definitely relates to this conversation. Now, a while ago, I did an assignment about digital blackface for a class I was in one semester in college, where I went into the history of blackface, and I talked about, of course, blackface, how it relates to digital blackface, the use of memes, all that stuff. And so I have a script for it because I originally made a YouTube video for that assignment, but I think I want to re-record it for the podcast because, again, it relates to this conversation, and just have it as a part two to this episode because I do go more in depth on this topic. So with that in mind, I do want to take the time to define appropriation, cultural appropriation, before I get into this discussion, just so people are clear on what it is, so there's no confusion, and really go into this conversation with these definitions in mind. So according to Webster's Dictionary, to appropriate, and we're using this as a verb, appropriate the verb, to appropriate is to take exclusive possession of something. It also means to take or make use of without authority or right. So to take or make use of something without authority or right. Now, dictionary.com defines cultural appropriation, which we're talking about here, as the adoption, usually without acknowledgement, of cultural identity markers from subcultures or minority communities into mainstream culture by people with a relatively privileged status. So, in other words, to culturally appropriate something, you are taking without acknowledging. You are making it seem as if you have created this new thing without really giving homage or acknowledging the sources that you got it from, the origins of it. So with all this in mind, let's get into this episode. Now, I tried to find the TikTok of the woman speaking, and I could not find it at all. It wasn't in my likes or anything, and I thought I had saved it, but I guess not. But essentially, she was explaining that Gen Z slang is just misinterpreted and reappropriated African-American English or African-American vernacular English, depending on who, depending on who's saying it, but African-American English. That the way we speak is the language that was passed down to us from generation. So these are our mother and father's tongues. These are our great-great-greats, our ancestors' tongues. And that she is not speaking like a teenager, but that teenager is speaking like her. Now, of course, we have heard some form of this conversation time and time again. And it seems that, like, ever since the creation of the internet, TikTok, and really just the acknowledgement of Gen Z, Black people have constantly had to defend our speech and remind people of its roots. And of course, we've had to do this all for a very long time, well before any of this, but really it just seems like with the internet and TikTok, of course, it just has exacerbated all of this. And even more so, the recent millennial versus Gen Z debate seems to have, you know, exacerbated it even more. So I guess earlier in August, a Black TikTok creator, Khalil Green, went on to discuss an article written about the TikTok generational divide. And in the article, the author stated that Gen Z found millennials cringy because of the way they act online. And so Khalil, along with many other Black creators, called the author's perspective a bit whitewashed, especially when she discussed the language differences between Gen Z and millennials. And like many of them pointed out, most of the examples she pulled from Gen Z was just reappropriated African-American English. And Khalil goes on to explain that this divide isn't necessarily because of the age gap, like she was trying to make it out to seem, but because what is considered cool now is often tied to ethnicity and culture. So you end up with a bunch of white kids online who are still trying to find themselves, who end up co-opting Black language and other aspects of Black culture because it's deemed as cool. Now, the problem here is that this is usually a phase, one many white millennials have already gone through, and Khalil explains this as well. The language and lifestyle that Gen Zers see as cringe, they too will eventually partake in. And he sums it up perfectly by saying, put simply, much of this Gen Z versus millennial debate is a debate between white people who actively try to put themselves closer in proximity to Black American culture, Gen Z, and white people who are more distant and entrenched in their own distinct suburban culture, millennials. We even saw this in real time with the trend of white women posting pictures of their quote-unquote hot Cheeto girl phases compared to what they look like now. They're all housewives and living in suburban neighborhoods and are back into that suburban culture that Khalil emphasized earlier. When they were younger, it seems that they did things to increase their proximity to Blackness. Then they grew up and completely stopped and really became almost unrecognizable. Some of these videos, I was like, wow, is that even the same person? And a lot of people peeped that when this trend was going around. And so when you see things like this, people, you would think that people would then understand, like, this is why Black people get upset and want to gatekeep, and why other people of color get upset when they see these things about themselves as well and their cultures and want to gatekeep. Because it's upsetting when white people view aspects of our culture as things that can be taken on and off. Something that they can try for a little bit when they want to be rebellious or when they want to experiment. And most of the time, they're able to do this without judgment from society or their peers because it's just a phase, quote unquote. They're young. This is how the kids speak these days. This rebranding of African-American English as Gen Z slang upsets me because people have really convinced themselves that this is the case. And you see it in their responses to these videos when anyone is calling this stuff out. And one thing about white people, they gonna tell on themselves every time. And their favorite line is, language and culture are passed down. It's normal. So my question is, that only applies to Black culture, right? Right. It only applies to Hispanic and Latinx culture. I'm really confused because in these conversations, people love to act as if Black culture is, you know, finally getting the attention it deserves, or that Black culture is only now being noticed, when that's very far from the truth. Caricatures and blackface have been around for ages. And non-Black Gen Z is just another version of that. It's just with the rise of the internet, like I've mentioned before, these issues have become more widespread and it's easier to be exposed to these things. Their access to blackness is easier to obtain, and we'll talk about this more in next week's episode. But for a group, and we'll talk about this more in next week's episode, but I think for a group to claim they're super progressive, and this is a bit of a tangent here, but for a group to claim they're super progressive, and inclusive, Gen Z to some extent is not. And I only bring this up because everyone is so willing to listen and learn until it's time to learn about their own biases and how the actions they perceive as normal can be harmful. And this conversation, of course, extends beyond language or mannerisms or dress, but full on aesthetics and food. The clean girl aesthetic being an appropriation of Black and Hispanic / Latinx culture, white people's rebranding of popular Hispanic drinks and foods, such as cowboy caviar, spa water. And even recently, I was on Twitter and I saw that somebody made a response video to another white TikTok creator because she was saying that Hailey Bieber, I think, was claiming a new lip combination, a new makeup combination. And it was literally just lip liner and lip gloss, which is something that black and brown women have been doing for ages now, and calling it brownie gloss lips or something like that. And so when you see these things, on one hand, you're like, yes, culture should and does evolve and take aspects from others. But that is entirely different from what we are talking about. Culture should not be repackaged or rebranded as a new discovery when it is still heavily tied to its roots. When you can still talk to its creators or torchbearers, that is not evolution. You are still in the present. You're not taking inspiration at that point. You are blatantly stealing. So how do you not expect people to get mad at you? Make it make sense? Well, we just really would love to understand. You can't be upset that people get mad, because again, you're just stealing at that point. It doesn't really make sense. And of course, people aren't going to fully understand this often because they're just confused. Like, how is it oppressive? How is it racist? And it's like, we just want you to call it like it is and say where you got these ideas from, because they've been around all along. You can't just take something and then automatically make it yours and make it a watered down version of the thing that you took from. And that's what becomes mainstream. That is what everybody says, like, yes, that's the trend. And that's the big problem with cultural appropriation. These things are treated as trends. Again, these things that people can try on and then take off, when for a lot of people, like, no, this is our lifestyle. These are our lives. Like, these are the things that we've grown up around. And to see them be taken, just to see them be taken and not have given any credit for it, that's what's upsetting to us, because we're like, this is our life. This is what you're messing with. And it just seems that people don't understand that. They don't want to understand that. And people choose to be ignorant about these topics. And that is what, and that's what's frustrating. So again, I'll probably go more in depth next week about some of these topics, maybe, maybe not. But that was just a little bit of a taste. Now I want to talk about Miss Hallie being the new Ariel. Now, I thought we had left this conversation in 2019. But here we are. Apparently people forgot and now they've been reminded. But for those of you who don't know, Halle Bailey was casted as Ariel for Disney's live action version of The Little Mermaid. Recently, a teaser trailer was released and y'all, all hell broke loose. A bunch of people, mainly white, went to Twitter to complain about Ariel being black and little redheaded girls not, you know, no longer having a role model. As if the original movie has ceased to exist, but you know. And now the trailer has, well, since the last time I checked, the trailer had over 1.5 million dislikes. And so I'm pretty sure there's more by now, but y'all are mad for real. Like, y'all are really mad. Now, what did I say earlier? White people gonna tell themselves every time. Like I said, at first, white people were like, Ariel should be white to stick to the source material. And when that didn't work, they then went on to talk about hair color and how her hair wasn't accurate. When that didn't work, they went on to say, well, what if Disney made Tiana or Mulan or Pocahontas white? And people responded with, they can't do that because those characters are based on real people. When that didn't work, all of a sudden, they wanted to bring science into it. Well, scientifically speaking, per my calculations, mermaids can't be black. And just reading all the stuff, I was like, oh wow. I did not know that so many people had PhDs in mermaidology. Like, y'all are so smart. I did not realize that. And of course, people responded with, one, she's a fictional character, and two, technically, she wouldn't be white either. And my question is now, since all these people are clearly Disney fans, did we not watch Luca together? Did we all not see that their human form was distinct from their mermaid form? I mean, I would consider that a more accurate representation, but again, these are all fictional characters, so why does it matter? But of course, their callbacks to science, their references to science did not work. So now they have resorted to creating racist memes of Ariel sitting on watermelons or with Newports flying around her head. And even more recently, they've said, well, since they want to change our Ariel, our lovely white pure Ariel, how about we recreate a bunch of black films with white leads? And it's nothing but black exploitation, black trauma, and slave films. The way people have been responding, calling this new Little Mermaid woke propaganda, you would think Ariel swam out with a black beret on and her fist up singing a slave hymn. Oh my God. Newsflash, white culture is not being tainted or erased. You all will be okay. Now, it doesn't really surprise me, but again, I noticed that many of the films that white people were talking about recreating were films filled with black trauma, like I mentioned earlier. Or they were black biopics about civil rights leaders who also endured anti-black violence and racism. Now, this says a lot to me. One being, there are way too many films that exploit black pain, but also, whenever white people want to get back at us or make a mockery of us, it's always the worst aspects of our experiences, usually. And I think it's wild that they are only able to view us through a lens of trauma and violence, so much so that we are not allowed to be depicted as elves and mermaids or princesses without them having a hissy fit. Now, my first thought when I saw these recreations was immediately, don't threaten me with a good time. You want to recreate Selma? Go for it. Let's recreate Bloody Sunday, where black people are the officers while white people protest their freedom. Let's watch as white people are beat with batons, attacked by dogs, and violently sprayed with water hoses. Let a white man play Dr. King and let us watch him be gunned down on his balcony. You want to recreate 12 Years a Slave? Go for it. Let's see a white man be kidnapped and dragged from the north to the south and be forced into slavery despite being a free man. Let's watch as black slave owners and overseers assault and brutally beat their white slaves. I would love to see countless movies of white people shackled and whipped and sold, their families torn apart, stacked onto ships with barely any space to breathe, feces and urine and vomit and God knows what else falling over them. Since we want to talk about narrative changes and appropriation, because somehow Ariel's race change is appropriation. I don't understand how we've made that connection. How about you all appropriate Black Death then? Well, that's clearly what they want to do. How about you all appropriate Black Death? Black trauma, Black sorrow, Black pain. Let's switch the roles so you can see what it's like. Let's watch movies of you all being dragged from countertops, being forced to sit at the back of buses, being spit on and degraded, called all types of profanities for simply going to school. Let's watch your churches and houses get blown up and set ablaze. Let's watch you all be hanged and danced around. Let's be chased and terrorized by black men in hoods. Since you all want to recreate black movies, recreate those. I would love to see that. And I'm not going to sit here and speak for everybody else, but I'm sure a lot of other people, I'm sure other people like to see that as well. Because it would really mend my shattered Black girl heart, the one that has experienced racism. Yeah. It really mend that. So don't threaten me with a good time. The thought that this new Ariel could have been anyone, but that Halle went in and set the bar so high that no one could reach it because she was that perfect for the role should speak for itself. And that came from the mouth of the director. It is not her fault that she was just that good. And for all of you, tell your redheaded faves to step their game up next time and maybe they could be chosen. And I just feel like they're tripping about this, but let's wait until they see the rest of her sisters because a lot of them are not white either. So they are really going to have a fit when they see everybody else. Your racism is showing, white people, so you might want to put it up. Stop with the dog whistles and overt racism. If it bothers you that badly, don't see the movie. That is always an option. Let Halle have her moment. Let little Black girls have their moment. I literally tear up every time I see a video of a parent filming their child's reaction to that trailer. To see so many Black girls be excited, to hear them say, "She's brown like me," fills my heart with so much joy because I remember that feeling after seeing The Princess and the Frog for the first time. 9-year-old me was ecstatic. I watched that movie so many times, and it is still one of my favorite movies to this day, even if Tiana is a frog for the majority of the movie. But 9-year-old me wasn't worried about that at the time. She was just happy to see that she finally had a Black princess. She didn't have to look up to Jasmine or Pocahontas or even Esmeralda anymore because she had a princess of her own. Now, Black girls of this generation can experience that feeling. That excitement of the release day, the magic of experiencing the movie for the first time on the big screen. Y'all are that bitter you want to rob children of that experience? Get a life, get some business, and do better. With that said, this is Yasmin signing off. And always remember, keep those thoughts pretty. Peace.